When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Supernatural Circumstances, the podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole into the fantastic world of the strange, the paranormal, and the unknown. I'm Morgan Knudsen.
And I'm Mike Brown. It's time to dim the lights and settle in. Come along with us on this week's adventure. And this week, more Bigfoot.
More Bigfoot. Yeah, we're continuing our conversation.
Yeah, we're talking to Ron Moorhead, and Ron's been around for quite some time talking about this particular topic, which is awesome.
Yeah, and what I love about Ron's expertise is that he had such close encounters with these things when he was researching in the Sierra Mountains, mm-hmm. and he's got a very unique and special angle, and I think it came from having encounters with them that were so up close, first person, and mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it's amazing what he's uncovered here.
Yeah, some people are calling people like us who talk about the quantum connections to things crazy because they're so stuck in the material. But Ron's most recent book, The Quantum Bigfoot, comes from his 45 plus years of researching this phenomena. So, you know, it seems like the people who are more versed in things tend to start to head toward this particular direction, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way it's coming about and the way people have to think about this subject as well as, you know, the world and themselves is that everything isn't lumped into categories of physical or non-physical. You're mm-hmm. either spiritual or you're physical. And right. I think when people begin to re-examine that paradigm and that dynamic, when you start to realize that everybody has a non-physical component, our world really is non-physical under a microscope, mm-hmm. you can start to accept this a little bit easier.
Yeah, well, I've got a book for you to read. You know, I send you books and all that kind of stuff, but I've got another one for you to read. It's called Biocentrism, which is really kind of fascinating, and it digs into this, but that's for another day. Let's talk to Ron about
Absolutely.
His Bigfoot stuff.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Ron, this is such a wonderful opportunity to have you. So first of all, thank you so much for being here today. And I can't wait to get this conversation started because I've been dying to talk to you for a while. So welcome and thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for asking me. I'm looking forward to it also. Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot to go through and a lot to talk about because, you know, Ron, you and I, we've chatted a little bit in the past and we've been on the same page with so much. First of all, tell the audience a little bit about your history with Bigfoot before we get into the nitty gritty of this. Just maybe talk a little bit about the Sierra Sounds and your claim to fame.
Well, I guess if I have a claim to fame, it would be the Sierra Sounds. Yeah, in 1971, me and some of the hunters with this hunting camp 8 miles in the wilderness, and these things start coming around the camp. And we started taking tape recorders up, and they returned, and we started recording their chatter and their vocalizations. And 1972, we took in an investigative reporter sent to us by cryptozoologist Ivan Sanderson, who asked Peter Byrne if he could have time to investigate it. And Peter got a hold of Alan Berry, who was in California, and he came down and interviewed us. And we ended up taking him in 1972, and he was actually looking for a hoax, but couldn't find that. And he started recording the same thing we were, and he ended up actually fostering the sounds on the studies we had done at the University of Wyoming and different places. He seeked out a lot of professionals trying to get some attention, but he got booed out because they thought they was trying to pull their leg or something with this phony Bigfoot stuff, you know. But anyway, he finally got a hold of Professor Curlin at the University of Wyoming, and he did a year-long study on them. I just want to know, is there anything at all wrong with these? Because he gave me original recordings, and he was a sound engineer, a PhD in that field, and he said that it represented an animal, at least one part of it did, 8 foot tall, and that they go outside the human range with their vocalizations, and they're also inside the human range, so... it wasn't until 2008, I think, when a cryptolinguist from the Navy got a hold of him and by accident. And he came all the way out from Missouri, where he's teaching school at the time. He was retired from the Navy and interviewed us and got the contacts so that he could study him, because he thought on a little sample he saw it, heard was his. He thought it was language, and that's what he was trained to do in the Navy, was decode or not decode, but if a code was a language or if it was a type of message from foreign governments or something like that, and determine. And if it was a language, he could determine that, and he could transcribe it too. And so anyway, that was a big hit too. I didn't know a guy like that existed, because he came back and said, these things have a language by the human definition of his language, which is sapiens talk like we're talking. Then you get into Brown University, where Dr. Lieberman was, and he said that, only humans have a vocal mechanism for cognitive speech like we're talking right now. To me, that puts another dot in the puzzle I've been looking at for 50 years, and that's these things that we were dealing with in Sierra Nevada Mountains of California have a human component to them, and that is language. That's very, very important, I think, that we understand that, because once the government finally told us that UFOs are acceptable to believe in now, we can believe them, right?
Right.
Or not.
Yeah.
I put the alien intervention into, and that's way back into the cuneiform texts and the Anunnaki and all that, which is a Sumerian language, first written language, as you probably know. And anyways, Mesopotamia and a lot of languages came from that. So I was raised religiously, and I knew quite a bit of scriptures in biblical terms, but that puts a whole other twist on it. I mean, it corroborates a lot of things that you've been conditioned to believe, but then it straightens you up on some things that you were taught that was true or that isn't true. And it kind of got me into opening my mind up, and a lot of the trips I've made to into South America and into Russia and Siberia and Nepal, just to look into the subject matter more and see what's going on, because there's more going on with what we encountered up there than just a classical ape running around the woods. And that's what most people believe they are, and that's what they want to accept right now, because I had a cousin one time, she said, you know, if these things were out there, the government would tell us about it. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard, I think, now that I look back on it. But yeah, the government, if they can't control something, they either make fun of it or they hide it some way. And they don't know what to do about these beings, because they are out there. They know they're out there. And so they can't acknowledge them, because they don't know what to do with it. It's going to change how history is written.
Yeah, we saw that example with the Phoenix Lights. Governor at the time brings out, you know, some guy dressed like an alien to make fun of things. And that's exactly how things are dealt with. If we don't understand it, let's poke fun, because if it challenges everybody's paradigm of reality, then that's going to get very problematic.
Exactly. And this does. What we're dealing with now does challenge everybody. I think everybody's coming out of the woods a little bit and looking into things. They realize they can't really trust what the government says. Just they lead you astray. I mean, we believe that. We think there was a weather balloon out there in 1947, right? But there are aliens here. They've been here on this planet. I've seen evidence of them, South America, quite a bit. And just, you know, what they've done to the genome of different species, I think they've manipulated them. And that also stands true with the biblical texts. It also gets into the cuneiform texts in Mesopotamia. And they've been manipulated, some type of species. And I think we've been manipulated. I mean, we weren't always like we are now. Something made us like we are. And you can say God or whatever, but that's something messed with the troglodytes, the caveman, and they've also shortened our telomeres so we can't live as long as we're used to. Stuff like that has happened, and it's just really interesting to look into it. But I encourage anybody just to open their minds up when they get into this subject. Otherwise, it's like a parachute. If you don't open, it ain't going to be any good.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, it's so true. It's interesting here in Alberta, because what I've noticed, I was having a conversation with another investigator friend of mine the other day, is that now the forestry services here have been using Bigfoot within their advertising, and not in a way of, ha ha ha, that's Bigfoot, but they've been including Sasquatch in the sense where they'll say, this is everybody's home, including Bigfoot. And then Bigfoot is in the ad. And I thought that was so interesting. And now I've seen probably five or six different advertisements in this way. So like you were saying at the beginning, how people are really seeming to, I don't know whether it's becoming more acceptable or people are coming to the terms that this is at least there. I don't think they've gone as far as maybe this conversation is going to go, but I found that really interesting that it's become something that is more publicly discussed.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like aliens. You can talk about them now too. You couldn't do that a few years ago without getting laughed out of the classroom, you know, more and more Bigfoot are being seen, and the more people see them. And I mean, we're talking about thousands, not just hundreds. They're being seen all over. And so you got the skeptics say, well, why don't they find one then? They think they're just like a ape out in the woods or something. Well, they're much more than that, from my experience, at least the ones I dealt with, and I'm pretty sure a lot of them are the same way. They're able to do things that we have not evolved into yet. I don't think we were shortchanged by our creator. I think we probably have a lot of things that we just haven't evolved into yet. With our cognizance and our...
I love that perspective. That's fantastic. Was there a moment in this for you, whether it was during the Sierras or something else, was there a moment when you thought, okay, this is the moment that I think there's a non-physical component to this?
Well, no, actually, during the 70s, we never considered anything like we're talking about now, other than later on, we wondered, why wouldn't we see them more often? Why didn't we... You know, they were right outside our shelter yet. You couldn't catch them hardly. I mean, I only got a glimpse of one once, and my daughter saw them three times, so that was unique. But and my friends have seen glimpses of them. Al Berry never got to even get a glimpse, but he lived quite a ways away from us, and he couldn't get down there as often as we went. I was just over 100 miles from our camp, and I went up there every chance I got. I was gonna get somebody to go with me, and there wasn't an aha moment until I started researching where giants come from, and really got into it a few years later after all this close-in stuff was going on. But we knew something was strange because we'd hear our camp being torn apart and look out there and nothing had changed. Well, how do you explain that? And we couldn't explain a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Now, Al Berry, the investigative reporter we took in, he had a master's degree in science. And he said, don't talk about this strange stuff, you know, the orbs and different things like that you see, and just don't talk about it because people think you're crazy. Well, I talk about it now. I can think I'm crazy if I want to.
Yeah, right.
More and more people
good for you.
They don't think I'm crazy. They're quite into me being as crazy as I was because too many people are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I know for myself, we... In Alberta, we've got a lot of Sasquatch, a lot of sightings. I mean, we're really a hot spot here, like in BC where Mike is. And the one thing we have a lot of as well is the dogman phenomenon. We've got a lot here and whatnot. And the number of times I've not seen a Sasquatch, but I've seen dogman a number of times. And what I've noticed about them, which really pushed me into the non-physical side of this, was the I had a number of sightings where I ended up quite close to them within a number of meters, and I could have reached out and touched them. Like, this was so solid. I mean, you could see his fur, you could see his ears, you could see, I mean, the details in his, I mean, this was so, so solid. And yet I've had other encounters where these things have just disappeared into what I can only explain as smoke. Like, they've just gone. And that was the shifting moment for me, where I was like, if I'm watching this with this phenomenon, then why not Sasquatch? Because, and then I can completely understand why the people that see them are like, no, this was solid. This was their flesh and blood. I get it. I get their argument, but I've seen the other side to this. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think until somebody does see something strange around these things, they're not going to get into that area.
I agree.
They're flesh and blood, no matter what you say. You can't, you know, they can just say, well, you were delusional or something like that. But they're not going to agree with you on that until they have a personal experience. And they probably never will, because their frequency is all screwed up, I think. And until you get the right frequency, you're probably not.
Absolutely. That's what I really want to get into today with this, is that angle of it, is that, I mean, we all take a very parapsychological approach to this, and this idea of what we are perceiving in the world. Mike, you and I talk about this so damn much on the show.
Yeah, every show.
Every show is that there's these frequencies, these emotional frequencies, these, you know, being ready to see something. And that idea that when you're aligned with something, that's when something manifests. And we see this in the hauntings and paranormal phenomenon all the time. Is that your take on this too, Ron? Is that this is something that once you're aligned with that frequency, you see the manifestation?
Yes, absolutely. Everything, according to Tesla's energy, frequency, and vibration, we are at our most minute level, our energy vibrating at a frequency. And even Einstein said, if you find the frequency of anything, you can change its matter. So how do they disappear? We only see within 430 and 770 terahertz. That's our frequency range for our eyes, and that's created by light. And that's light's frequency. And once things get out of that frequency, you're not going to see it. And I think a lot of people, well, see these things, and they know that it's got to be just flesh and blood. But I'm writing a whole chapter about flesh and blood only right now, because nothing that's living is just flesh and blood. And we all have our energy body, you know, our etherical, spiritual soul, so to speak, consciousness. We have those things that other animals don't necessarily have. And there's two parts to us. And if we get on the right frequency, I think they can mind speak to you. You can see them if they want you to. But they do go out of your perception, our visible perception, which is as a frequency range. And what happens to them then, I don't know. I have a theory that they go through the fourth dimension of time, and they probably reside in the fifth or sixth dimension now. Either they go into a cave underground. Don't know. Maybe some do both, because I don't think they're all the same. I got to say that up front, because they too many different stories about these things all over the world that I've discovered. And they just they don't have the same attributes. They don't act the same way, and most of the time they don't even look the same way, except they're hairy and big, look like a big ape. I think it's important for people to realize that what we dealt with in Sierras, other people have dealt with too, because I've heard people say, we've heard those sounds just like you recorded. And but then you get these other people that don't do nothing but throw rocks at you or something. But anyway, it's very exciting, this whole field. And it's a good time to be living, good time to be alive. I think we're in a special time of this transition.
No, it's true. Like you just said, what I've been thinking a lot lately, what a time to be alive. There's all this stuff happening in regard to, you know, UAP disclosures and people being more willing to look at things. It's my brain is just leaking with all the information that just keeps coming to me, and I'm trying to take it all on board, and I don't know if I can.
Well,
you know, yeah, but we're going to try.
Exactly. The more you learn, the more you got, you know, there is to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps going. When you start looking into it deeper, it's a big rabbit hole.
It certainly is.
It's a classical world that we live in, a three-dimensional environment. And once you realize that either dimensions or frequencies, once you get out of this third-dimensional environment, things are different. And according to quantum physics, there are several other dimensions going on. So what happens in those dimensions? Well, time don't exist as we perceive them. You know, linear time is just for our third-dimensional environment. But it's created here for us. We're a very special race of beings on this planet. And we've been given dominion on this planet, not domination, but dominion. And it's a very special place that we live on, and we're destroying it. And that's sad news there, because all these wars and all this stuff going on where people are just hurting each other. Mm-hmm. The only way you're going to really get into a higher frequency for yourself, which you can do, is through love and compassion and caring about other people. And when you start hurting other people, that's when it goes against you, when your vibration goes down. Gosh, yes. So these guys walk around the woods with guns thinking they're going to get the money shot one of these days. I think they have nothing coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting story to back that up, because a couple of years ago, I was doing workshops out in the field with a couple of investigators, and we were looking at this. There's a number of areas in Alberta that are very similar to Portlock, Alaska, which we can talk about later. We were going out, and I was explaining to people why some of these readings were coming out the way they were, and the one aspect of these trips were the dogmen. They were there and sighted by the groups often. And the one night was really interesting because they were there almost every single night. And the way I would prep the groups before we would go out is we would get them into this place of allowing, of joy. They were excited. They were happy. And every single time something would be seen. The one night we went out, the wooded area in which we were holding these workshops was absolutely dead quiet. That energy just wasn't there. We never saw them. It was just really strange. And when we got back, and the group eventually left and so on and so forth, we found out that the one guy that was in the group was actually carrying in his cargo pants this gigantic hunting knife. And it was the only time that ever happened. And it kind of freaked us out because we realized we were like, man, we're going to start searching people before these workshops. But it was really interesting. But it was that night, that one guy and his intention, I think, absolutely kiboshed the entire thing. Hmm. And it was like wrong energy, wrong intention. We're not coming. And we saw nothing.
I think these things can read the energy. They can read the energy from that person. If he had in mind he's going to take one out with a knife or something like that, they would have read that. They could have.
Yeah.
So I think they read your aura, and we all have that going on around us. It's our energy frequency, our magnetic field. And really, yeah, if anybody has the wrong intention when they're out there, they're probably not going to have anything happen. There's a lot of dogman stories going on, and I didn't realize that till I got back here on the East Coast. And I just spoke at a conference down in Tennessee where I had so many dogman encounters. It's really, that was a topic more than Bigfoot.
And, it's so fascinating.
I think they say, well, you think dogman could exist? I said, absolutely. If Bigfoot can exist, dogman can exist, because aliens mess with different species on this planet. And so, yeah. In fact, they took me out to the lake, land between the lakes, to show me where this deputy, where he saw one face to face. And just, you just believe him. And I'm supposed to be going down there again this month or next month. They want to take me out again. They want me to have an encounter.
Yeah, it's what I found with them specifically is that they are so incredibly responsive. At least the ones here. I mean, the ones there might be a completely different breed, but the ones here respond so innately to joyful energy. And that's what has been the consistent factor for all my research here has been joy. As soon as you got somebody that's coming in with, like, you know, fear or trepidation or anything, that's when these sort of negative responses start to come, or they don't show up at all. And I'm I think it comes back to like what you were talking about just now with that idea of, you know, raising your vibration into this space of love and compassion and whatnot, and that state of allowing in which this stuff then becomes accessible to us. And I think that's where so much of this sits. And like you were saying, just these things, just like our, you know, our physical animals here, they get it. I mean, they're so in tune and in touch, I think, with, you know, their own instincts and that energy that we're talking about. I mean, how can you not pick up on it?
Right. Yeah, they do pick up on it. And joy and having a good vibe like that is one of the keys to the thing, and not having fear. But once you start having that fear in there, that's when you want to carry a knife to protect yourself or a gun or something like that. And It all comes about from fear. And fear is your only enemy, really, on this planet.
Oh, yeah.
Because it sends out a frequency out of your own aura, which they'll see. My horse, when animals see that, a horse will know if somebody's afraid to get up on it or not. And most animals are in tune to that, like that. And we are too if we just pay attention to it, but most of us don't. We think we live in we all live in our conditioned box upon our top of our shoulders.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I see it with my snake all the time as well, Galen. We'll have people over or whatever, and if there's somebody that's hesitant, he will not go sit with them. He just won't. You have somebody who's showing him, you know, joy, or he seems to, you know, think that they're in a good spot, he's over there in 2 seconds and he'll go and fall asleep on their lap. You know, it's so cool. So let's talk about some of these sites a little bit, because I think the sites themselves oftentimes go by the wayside for people talking about these encounters. And I think the sites themselves have a lot to do with what's going on in terms of what I've noticed in my research. Have you found that as well, where there's certain places that have similarities between them where people are reporting this stuff more?
Seems like it. Yeah. I used to say it doesn't matter where you're at. If you got the right intention, they can find you. And really they can, but there's a spots on this planet, which I think just has a magnetic draw to it. And, I think we had one of them there at the Sierra camp, and still do. I mean, it's just strange things that goes on up there. And you get like the 38 parallel. That's where all Well, you know the story about that. There's information about that anyway. Pyramids and different things are lined up exactly on the 38th parallel. And anyway, it's ancient stuff. It's really interesting stuff. Get into this. I just got a book with Matthew McCloy and Billy Carson on the Epic of Humanity. Can't wait to read it. It's into the how things really are, and through evidence that they found. And everybody's gonna be shocked when they find out how history has to be rewritten. A lot of things we've been taught are just not true. It's just we've all been conditioned, and from time of birth, been conditioned to believe certain things, and that's the way it's got to be. And people are not going to get out of that box no matter what. But you just about have to when you're faced with facts. But a lot of people say, "Don't confuse me with facts. I've made up my mind." It's not going to go there, you know. But things are different, and things are going to change on this planet before long. And I sound like
we
a conspiracist
that.
Now, don't I?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but this is all written and it's all prophesied and it's all happening just like it's supposed to. But I'm not afraid because all is going to happen according to energy, according to science, quantum science, energy, which we're made of, cannot die. So that means we're just going to change forms according to physics. And if you're a religious person, you're just going to go to heaven, I guess, or go somewhere. But we all change. You know, this body's going to die, but the etherical part of us will not die. It just goes on and on. So where it goes, we'll find out when we find out.
Yeah, I don't want to find out too soon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you got to enjoy all your experiences on this planet, because that's what it's all about. That's why we're here, to experience things and to learn how to respond to things. And we respond to, when we really respond with love and compassion on issues, everything. Just be that mindset. You will raise your personal vibrational frequency. You won't get sick anymore. I've been sick in ages. And things just work out better for you. Mm-hmm. You're not being a victim of things. And so many people want to consider themselves a victim. And when something goes wrong, they want. Well, no, that's like I tell my grandkids, you never lose. You either learn something or you win. Never lose. And yeah. We're just here to learn. And the more you can learn and learn how to respond to things, the better you're going to be. You guys know all this stuff, I guess. I'm talking to the choir here, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, some of our listeners are new to this stuff. So.
Well, and I think they're new to this stuff in regards to this subject. I think so many of our listeners are, you know, they're practicing this type of thing and these practices throughout their life. But then when this side of things, paranormal or cryptozoology or anything like that, gets in the mix, oftentimes there's a dividing line, I think, with people between this and what's going on in their life. And there isn't, there shouldn't be, you know. And I think often we see people sort of going out and looking for things like Bigfoot and whatnot out of ego. And maybe, and I found personally that going out with no expectations has really been the key, that it's no expectations, going just to be in a state of allowing, of meditation, you know, which whatever. And I think adding that ego in, that's part of the detriment to this is the looking and the searching kind of puts us in this vibration of, well, it's not there. Mm. And as soon as we're in that vibration of it's not there, I can't see it, we manifest more of not seeing it. I think so. It's almost like a catch 22. I don't know. What do you think about that, Ron?
Yeah, I think you're right. And according to physics too, nothing is real until it's observed. That's hard to get your head around.
Yeah, we talked about that in our last show, actually, how, you know, the whole idea of the slit experiment with in quantum physics, mm-hmm. how, you know, if you're not observing light, it's a wave, but when you do observe it, it's a particle.
Yeah, right. That's hard to understand, but it's a fact.
Yeah.
But light is our, it's our, I don't want to call it God, but it's kind of, the Bible says God is light. And the light beings are what the Anunnaki were. They were light beings. They were shiny ones. Well, Satan was called the shiny one. They were big. Wow, there's just so much going on that it's hard to get your head around it all. We've all been misled and misdirected for most of our life. And then all of a sudden, this door opens up and you see more light over there.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's interesting to me with these locations, and I've had the same experience that you've had where you set the intention and it doesn't matter where you are that these things will show up. I've seen them quite close to my own place and in places that I did not expect. I thought for a long time that I had to go to a certain place, and I've realized that's not that true. But I found at the same time that there's been these really interesting geological similarities, and I've talked pretty extensively with some of your cohorts from the show Alaskan Killer Bigfoot and whatnot, and I've had some interesting conversations with them. And what I found out in regards to that site, and as well as a bunch of them here in Canada, is that there's a really interesting dynamic of these places that seem to have these rolling electromagnetic fields within the space. And what I've been able to trace them back to has been the makeup of the land itself. So most of these places seem to have a volcanic history to them, which means there's oftentimes like there's quartz underneath of that. Often when you get these sort of spikes of electromagnetics and coupled with the volcanic land underneath. And I found this to be really interesting, where people that are receiving, like, or able, not really receiving, that's the wrong word, but picking up on these different things, like the camera batteries dying, people feeling sick, you know, seeing things out of the corner of their eye, feeling like they're being watched, all of those things, which is really typical of high electromagnetics in a space. It's interesting to me that these cryptids seem to be often within these areas. Like, I have not heard of one of those areas geomagnetically where these beings haven't been seen. And I find that's a really fascinating thing too, that like, I wonder if there's something about those spaces where it's either, I don't know, putting people in the right vibration to see them, or maybe there's an attraction to them. I don't know, but I'm puzzled by that. And it's very, very, that aspect of it's very interesting to me.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know what to say about that.
Good. We've stumped you.
Stumped you, yeah. Because I keep seeing it, and we have, because we've got a number of sites very similar to Portlock, Alaska. And for those of you who have not seen Alaskan Killer Bigfoot, you can get it on Discovery Plus. It's a fantastic show. And Ron is in episode 4. But it is a fantastic show about the Alaskan site of Portlock, where it was said that Sasquatch had gotten incredibly upset over the fact that the land was being overfished and logged and settled, and it ended up allegedly killing a lot of the citizens of Portlock in a pretty gruesome way. But there, to me, what was really interesting about that case specifically, is that I noticed so many similarities tying into other sites like Bray Road in Wisconsin. There's a number of places here in Alberta that are very, very similar and have all of these various aspects of this weird geological makeup. And yet we also see Dogman and Sasquatch, which to me is just really interesting. So that's the aspect of this that I, in my own research, like, that I really want to explore, because I think there's something to that, and it's very easily testable, but I think there's something else going on, and it has to do with our planet. I think our planet itself has something to do with this. It's really, really fascinating to me. So yeah, I just wanted to put that out there, but yeah, people who haven't seen Alaskan Killer Bigfoot, download it.
Yeah. When I talk to those guys on Alaska Killer Bigfoot, I suggest, 'cause I flew over in a helicopter before I landed there. And I've seen where they've been really heavily timbered years and years, probably in the 40s, you know, and the trees were growing up, but there was some that was still taller than others. And so I told them, I think probably just, you know, you messed up with, they were overfishing, over timbering. They were also mining the area. And I said, the best thing you can do is, if you want to rehabituate this place, it's just respect it. And imagine if one of these things come turn out of the woods there and said, hey, and screaming at him or something, 12, 15 foot tall, something like a hairy monster, they'd have shot at it. And that would have probably, you know, pissed it off, and it would have torn apart. So that's what I thought. That's the only recommendation. Because they took me up there as a quote unquote Bigfoot expert, which I don't think I am. I just know a little bit more than most. But anyway, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting those guys. They're all real people. You know, they really do want to know what's going on. And something did go on. But I really do think that there's some type of entity up there that they ought to respect, because it doesn't like you tearing up trees. I'm writing another book right now. There's a whole chapter on trees, how I've talked to so many people that's had encounters when they were either cutting a tree or they're around the clear cut area. They really have a problem with us messing up the planet like we aren't cutting the trees. I think the trees are an energetic form for them. And of course, without trees, we wouldn't breathe either. So it works for both of us. Trees are important to them. And that started off with me years and years ago when a guy came to me and had a Bigfoot sighting not too far from where one of my businesses was up in the mountains there. And he said, all I was doing is I was cutting a log up and seeing this guy sitting there watching me, and no one's supposed to be around his property. So he put his chainsaw down, started walking over towards it, and stood up. It was a Bigfoot. And walked behind a bush. He said he'd seen the head of it go behind the bush, and the Blissey figure when he got over was 7 foot tall, so this thing was big. And he was like a Paul Bunyan type guy. I mean, he's married to a local Native American, and he didn't talk much, but when he talked, he listened. And he just, he was so sincere, and I thought, well, wow. Okay, that was one of my first ones about them cutting trees. That was years ago. Just trees are very important, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I just know there's been a lot of reports around that. Trees, and I get off on the subject pretty easy, so you just gotta throw something at me.
But no, the tree thing is really interesting, and I think you really hit the nail on the head with that case specifically, because when I was watching the show and talking to a lot of these like Kyle and Ash and these people, is that what I found was, you know, it's so easy to be able to go into these areas and, you know, think, well, we have to take our land back. You know, and that was kind of the attitude I think that some of them went in with was we just have to take our land back because Bigfoot took this. And I couldn't help but feel throughout that entire thing is that Bigfoot, in that sense, that entity, whatever Nantinak was, is that it was never ever given a voice. And when it wasn't given a voice, the encounters just, I mean, they escalated, things just got worse. And, you know, when it did try to speak, it was immediately shut down. Like you said, it was shot at. It was, you know, just told to be quiet very, very quickly. And I couldn't help but watch that and see the two sides of pain that story held. And it wasn't just, you know, these poor people that lost their loved ones. And in throughout that situation in the 1940s, but also prior to that, but also the what I saw from Nantinak, which seemed to me to be hurt, fear, and frustration. And I always thought that was just an element that, Ron, you touched on in the show, which I thought was so important, is that the understanding of, you know, whenever you see anger, hurt, fear, and frustration is usually underneath of it. And, you know, especially for something like this. And I thought your part in the show was just so incredibly important.
Thank you. Yeah, it's all I knew to say, because from what I've seen and the history that I'd read about it, because what happened at Portlock is undisputable. I mean, it did happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a matter of record. So many people say, oh, well, there's nobody around really that's seen it because they're so long ago. But it did happen. And anyway, it's an interesting story. I hope to go back to Alaska again this summer. Some guys are trying to get me to go up there. They've run into Dogman a lot here, and they want to go to Alaska now and check out things. I said I'd go with them. So. But I got some places lined up there, which should be exciting for them. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think with your guidance in terms of the energetic part of it, I think really that's the key with so much of this stuff, and is what we've been talking about. Do you think as we move forward in this field, that people will start to realize that this is partly an inner search for this? It's not as much of an outside thing, because I know in parapsychology that was the lesson. I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and that was my lesson, is I started out in this, you know, search for external phenomenon that I thought was completely out there, and I realized so much of this has to do with me. This is my work that I get to experience on an external level if I can do the work. Like, do you think that this is partly an inner search for people?
I do. Yeah, you had to. Yes, that's very good way you put that. Very well done. Yeah, because we're all looking for something outside of ourselves, and you realize what you are inside. That's what you're referring to there. Is that what you're talking about?
How we need to evolve ourselves
inside. Yeah. Yeah, because I get into that too, is the Pineal gland, how you listen to the oneness that we all really are, and that has to be connected to the heart, which talks to our brain. Our heart is our gut feeling, and if we don't go by that, our brain's law will talk us out of things. It has to be in coherence. That's why you do meditation, so you can rhythm of your balance, all those three components there in your embodiment. But that's very important that we get ourselves right. And it's going to help us all the way through. It's going to help the world.
Yeah. No, I agree. And like, I mean, Mike, well, we talk about this so often on the show.
Talk about it too much, I think.
We talk about it too much. This really is this reflection outwards of these manifestations, you know, and what we see. And I see this interestingly in hauntings as well. And I've got this program called Teaching the Living, which I've been taught in post-secondary and a couple of other, well, for years in workshops and stuff. And that is to get people to understand that where we are emotionally is what's getting reflected back at us. And it's, you know, all of the things that end up happening to us are they're reflections back about some sort of inner state that we've got going on. And I firmly believe this, and I've seen this happen on like poltergeist cases and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that, but it happens. It's every day. Like, it doesn't have to just do with the paranormal or hauntings or things like that. It's just, there's so much that we don't understand, or we are out of touch with our inner selves. And then it manifests outside of us and we're going, what the hell was that? Like, you know, this is being asserted on me. And then we go into victim mode and whatever, but it's like, there's that inner search. What have you learned about yourself, Ron, that you didn't know when you started this?
How much more we are as human beings, as a human race. We're not just here today and gone tomorrow. We're very important, and who we are and what we have the ability to do is very important. We just don't reach it so much. These things, I think some of them have been here. I say some of them because they're not all the same. I've been here since before Homo sapiens, and they've evolved more than others. Some of them have different attributes than others because something else messed with the genome of one species or another. And anyway, I've learned that it's all about trying to make yourself better as a human being on this planet, and to try to get that point across to people, because this whole planet's got a vibrational frequency too, and it's changing now from one to the other. It's in a, I think someone said we're going to the stage of Aquarius, whatever that means, but that's a high frequency, good stuff. Things are going to open up. I think that's what the Mayan calendar was all about, is we're changing into another frequency, and we're all becoming more enlightened. And I think enlightening ourselves with interesting stuff like what we're doing now. And did you know who Paul Dirac was? He's a professor. He's dead now, but he got the Nobel Prize in 1933 for antimatter. This changes the subject a little bit, but matter and energy are interchangeable. And people want to know how they disappear and how they do what they do. Well, they just know things that we haven't caught quite up to yet. But yeah, we got to search for it. And you're right on target with all that stuff.
That's good to hear. And,
Yeah, this is the stuff that really, this is where I have my interest. This is where my interest lies in all of this. Like, watching the strife and that kind of thing that's happening in the world today, and trying to figure out what it means. There's a lot of people in fear of what's happening right now, but it seems like it's a, for want of a better word, like a liminal situation where we're in transition to something else, and that sometimes can be painful and even violent and brutal.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Well, even Abraham Lincoln said, you find what you look for. Yeah, what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening all the world, it's frightful to a lot of people. Is our economy going to drop out of the bottom? What's going to happen? And I'm not worried about it myself, but I'm in my 80s now, so I don't care. I've had a good life. Had a lot of experiences, a lot of excitement, and it's not over yet, or I'd be gone, if that's what we're here for. And until you've responded to everything, well, you're going to respond to it. You're going to be here. And I've accepted that. So it's all about experiences.
Your work is phenomenal, and your book, Quantum Bigfoot, is stellar. Anybody out there who wants to delve more into this, this is the book. Like, this is the one that you want to get. It's so insightful, with such incredible with such incredible stories and everything that, you know, you've not only experienced, but the insight that you've placed within it, I think it's invaluable for the field going forward. So, I mean, Ron, thank you so much. And please tell people where they can find you, what you're up to, and how they can follow you.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a website. It's ronmoorhead.com. And I have a product page on there too, which actually they're working on that right now as we speak, I hope. And you can get my books, or you can download the books or the CDs. I have two CDs that I've produced with the Jonathan Frakes, the Star Trek Next Generation narrator, one of them about 40 minutes long. It's Al Berry's story, the scientist we took in. And he wrote it, and Jonathan Frakes narrated. The second one is my story, and I captured some really interactive sounds one night in 1974 that my feature on it. And I narrated it myself. They're both about 40 minutes long. The books are, one of them is Voices in the Wilderness, and that's my chronicle. And it actually comes with a download, so you can download the sound that I get when you get to the context and the story of what sound I'm talking about. You can actually hear that sound, and that's on a link that you can download. And then the other Quantum Bigfoot is what I that you just was talking about, and where it led me, what did all this lead me to, try to put the dots together, and why I travel so extensively to try to find out more about all this stuff. And then the book I'm coming out with now is called Bigfoot Unveiled, and it should be out probably within a month. I've got it out of my editor's hand now and into the formatting, and we'll see how that works out. It's just a little more extensive, and it gets into more things, which I think... Actually, I wish I had it now, and I could change it again. Keep learning more. The more you dig into stuff, the more you find out. You know,
that's the problem with a book. Every time, every time I've written even a chapter for a book, it'll be published, and then I'll find new information every single time.
Every time.
That's where I'm at.
Every time. I know when I wrote my first one, it was like that. I published it, and now I look back and I think I could add 10 more chapters to this. I don't know what happened, but thank God, because it means the field is advancing, and I think it's going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Yes, everything is heading the right way, and I just got to teach people to listen to themselves, listen to their own vibration, listen to their heart, because your heart is your biggest helper. It's receiving from the oneness that we all really are part of if we just learn to connect to it. And you do that through, I believe, the pineal gland, which is a receptor in your brain. And it feeds into the heart, like I talked about a few minutes ago. And that heart, it gives you that gut feeling that you should do a certain thing. That's what you should follow. And the biggest issue we all have is our conditioning that we've got in our forward brain. And it's got to be in rhythm with the heart. And it's got to listen to the heart and do what the heart says. It's called the gut feeling, and I think that's extremely important for people to understand, because your analytical brain will talk you out of things, and it'll talk you to go one way or the other if you start thinking about something too much. And you just go by your feeling. That's what I got to say about that.
I think that's spot on. I know we tend, especially I think the younger generations and stuff coming forward, everything's become very much you can allow the thinking mind to take over, and it can run you if you're not managing thought like a tool to move forward, and you're not in control and managing that, then you lose touch with that inner self and that inner voice, you know, when you've got all of this stuff coming at you. And no, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Mike, you and I, we work on that all the time.
Yes, you know, we do.
Working on it all the time and, you know, getting into meditation and making sure that we're, you know, we're kind of listening and creating that balance. And it's like you said, it's so important. Ron, thank you so much for this conversation. This has been so incredibly enlightening. It's more than what I could have hoped for. And just thank you so much for being here.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you for asking me. It has been incredible. Very good. You're right on the spot with that stuff you've been thinking there, both of you. So I appreciate that.
Thanks, Ron.
Absolutely. We will talk again very soon.
Thank you.
Another great talk with Ron. We've had other talks with Ron, but we couldn't record them because we couldn't get our recording situation together. So I'm glad we finally were able to have a conversation with him.
Oh, me too. I was so looking forward to this, and it did not disappoint at all.
No.
It really didn't. It just has fueled so many more questions for me and reinforced a lot of the experiences that I've had with different sort of cryptozoological mysteries.
Me too. It makes me think about, and Ron talks about it, dark matter, dark energy, and what exactly is this universe that we're in?
Yeah, big time. And I think it brought up some really, really interesting questions too in things that haven't been explored, in my opinion, properly yet. I think, you know, our focus has so been on whatever these creatures are that things like the environment, like environmental factors that are going into this haven't been researched and explored properly in regards to some of this stuff. So I think there's so much more that we can push ahead as long as people are having these conversations. I think as soon as we backtrack to, well, everything's either physical or non-physical, we're back to square one and we're not going to get anywhere.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'm really happy with what I've been learning since we started this show because I just think, whoa, what was my head ever in the sand, you know? I really had my head in the sand about a lot of different things before we started the show. And I think I'm more open-minded now, but I have more questions than ever.
Yeah, and I think that's the way this stuff works. I mean, you know, we're struggling along, I think, in our physical senses, trying to make sense of a piece of a massive elephant, you know, and we've got this huge elephant in front of us, but we've got a toe, and we're trying to figure out the rest of the elephant. So it's really a fascinating thing, and I'm right there with you. Like, the more I do this, the more I'm understanding, and yet the less I'm understanding all at the same time.
Yeah, I'm beginning to realize I'm never going to figure any of this out.
Yeah, and I think Ron brought up a really great point when we were chatting with him, and it's the part that we can understand about what we're experiencing is our part. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what we have to focus on going forward is, you know, we might not be able to make sense of the macrocosm that's out there, but the relationship that we have to what we're experiencing, I think is where the knowledge is really going to come from, like that emotional response to the world, how the world is responding to our emotions. Like we talked about that with, with Bigfoot and with Dogman, where, you know, that setting that intention and then having that response come, that part of our relationship with the universe is something that I think that everybody can delve into on their own and have these experiences in some way and learn at least about their little, you know, microcosm of you know, the elephant.
Yeah, I'm kind of into delving with a friend, so I'm really glad that I have people to talk to about this stuff because I have a funny feeling, were I to be just digging into this stuff all alone without, you know, being able to bounce things off people like yourself and Ron, I would be a very lost little boy.
I think we all feel like that, you know, it's crazy once you get into this stuff and then, you know, you go sit in a room. My dear friend Michael and I, we used to call them normies, the people that didn't, like, they're the muggles, the people that didn't really
quite
understand.
I call them earth people.
Earth people, I like that, yeah. And then you go sit in a room with them and you're going, you know, I can't talk about any of this. And yet that, to me, is where the deep conversations need to go and come from. So yeah. I can only deal with the normies so long, and then I have to, I'm like, where's Mike? I'm gonna have to get on the phone with Mike.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to what we have next. We've got some big stuff in the pipe, so Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us on this eerie expedition.
And remember, the line between the natural and the supernatural is often a thin one. Until next time, stay curious, friends.
I don't know if there's even a line. We should probably change that at some point.
Yeah, there is no line.
Yeah.
Who are we kidding?
Supernatural Circumstances is a co-production of Entity Seeker Paranormal Research and Teachings and Good Egg Studios. This podcast is part of the Curious Cast podcast network. Theme music by Corey Johnson of Catalyst Records in Edmonton, Alberta. You can learn more about Morgan Knudsen at entityseeker.ca and learn more about me, Mike Brown, and listen to my show, Dark Poutine, at darkpoutine.com. Feel free to email the show at supernaturalcircumstances@gmail.com.